Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. Our topic in the next half hour or so is the lives and times of the Boomer generation. Bill Kahn of Medford, Wisconsin, is the author of Boomer Time. It's published by Wynn Press Publishing. He's been an Air Force officer for more than 25 years, a coach for 30 years, a teacher for 24 years. And it's a pleasure to welcome him to the phone. Hi, Bill Kahn.
Yeah, good morning, Jim.
Nice to talk with you.
My pleasure.
This book is said to be a retrospective of the years from 1950 to 2006, but as I look at a website called It's Boomer Time, they describe Boomer Time as 1946 to 1964.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, there's a early boomer generation and a later boomer generation, but the 46 to 64 is inclusive of just about everybody. I was only born in 50, so I thought I'd start there because part of it is an analysis of my life and the life of boomers as well, so I thought I'd kind of start at 50.
Mm-hmm. What makes you qualified to examine and evaluate what's happened over the last 50 or so years?
Not a darn thing. I'm just an average Joe. Probably like everybody else. I've just kind of been involved in some unusual experiences in my life, you know, with about three different wars that I've been involved in as an Air Force officer, and I've been a teacher and a coach, and done a lot of things that I think a lot of Americans have done. And with my background in psychology, I thought I'd maybe try to put it together and analyze it a little bit and maybe even give a little perspective for the future, like you talked about earlier in your intro.
Mm-hmm. Talk about how you're using this book as sort of a self-examination of your life.
Actually, that's how I started. I was going to call the book Who's Keeping Score? With my psychology background and my love of psychology, I wanted to kind of throw my two cents in as far as how we look at ourselves and, what we can do in the future to maybe make our lives better or whatever. I kind of keyed off of an old Eric Erickson generativity concept that he brought us. It says that, when we get to be our age as boomers, we kind of look back on our life and evaluate what good things we did, what bad things we've done, and, try to evaluate, did we live a good life and so forth. And so I thought I'd start off by looking at my own life and looking back on some of the good and bad things I've done, and maybe the others that might read this book or want to follow through on the timeline would look back and say, yeah, I did this and I'm proud of that, or boy, I sure was ashamed when I did this, or I called this person a name or whatever, and then just kind of keep a running score through the years and look at it right now. What's the score? Are you in the plus column and the minus column? And if you're in the minus column, maybe you want to do things in the next few years to improve that score and, maybe feel like you're a productive boomer.
You've broken down the years involved from 1954 into various time periods. How did you accomplish that?
I just thought I'd break it up into five-year periods, 50 to 55, 56 to 60, so forth, just a way to kind of, make things more meaningful in those time frames. There was no real rhyme or reason, but by breaking up into five-year periods, I could look at the history a little bit, some of the big players during that time frame, and then as maybe a reader, maybe they can enjoy going back and looking at those times themselves and remembering some of those things that occurred and kind of reliving those good and bad times that we had as boomers.
Bill Kahn of Medford, Wisconsin, is the author of Boomer Time. It's published by Wynn Press Publishing, about the lives and times of the boomer generation. And if you want more information about the book, you can go to winpresshosting.com, the name winpresshosting.com. More information will be found there. And if you'd like to join the conversation with your thoughts about either being a boomer or what a boomer means to you, in Madison, the number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Having lived through the time period that you're describing here, it is kind of meaningful to go back and look at events and people who shaped our lives, including starting right on the first page, February 9th, 1950, Senator Joe McCarthy accused the U.S. Department of State for being riddled with members of the Communist Party. And we know how that played out.
Absolutely, yeah. At my age, I wasn't old enough to obviously to remember any of that sort of thing, but certainly we look back at history and see what kind of a major event Senator McCarthy played and how that kind of changed our view of things and, profiling and things that we think about today as well. So, yeah, that was pretty huge. You're right.
On June 25th of 1950, the Korean War began. So 1950 was very significant.
Yeah, it was. It was a big year. And unfortunately, you know, as I talk about in the book, we just really have kind of forgotten about the Korean War, I think, to a great extent. You know, those veterans that were over there and then did just such a fantastic job and, you know, gave their life and their lives as well to go over there and fight that war. And we very seldom even talk about it. And I don't want to sweep that under the rug. I think that, you know, needs to be validated, some of the great works that they did over there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were born in Illinois, but your dad was a pilot during World War II, wasn't he?
Actually, I was born in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, Kansas City.
Yeah, and he was a pilot. He flew P-38s and B-25s during World War II, and then also was called back into action in 50 to kind of work evaluating intelligence information coming out of the Korean War, too. So.
Mm-hmm. And he grew up in Wisconsin.
Yes, he did. White Lake, Wisconsin, up by Antigo, just to the east of Antigo there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get from Kansas City to Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's kind of a good story. I grew up in the big city, and things around 1960 started to get a little bit shaky down there. There were some race riots that some folks will remember some of those things. In fact, about a block and a half away from us, there was a house that was burned down from a black couple that had just moved in. And my dad just took it upon himself, said, that's enough. You know, I grew up in Wisconsin where things were, you know, calm and, you know, the forest and the woods and the animals and stuff. You know, he loved that life and he always longed to go back there. So my mom kind of had to give up her life in Kansas City and the rest of us to move up to a rural area from the urban area. So it was kind of my dad, without a job, just decided, hey, we're going to move back up to Wisconsin and start over again.
And where was that?
Where was that?
Where did you come to?
White Lake.
And oh, to White.
Yeah, we moved back to my dad's hometown.
Okay, so back to White Lake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he is. He's in the latter stages of Alzheimer's now, but yeah, he is still with us.
Mm-hmm. And your mom?
Yep, she's still living in White Lake with my dad at the same house that they built back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. And another momentous event of 1950 was that President Truman sent U.S. military personnel to Vietnam to help out the French forces.
Right, yeah. President Truman really was a very active individual, one of our more active presidents, I think, when we talk about doing things that might stir up controversy or conversation or whatever, you know. But like he said, you know, the buck stops here. He was a guy that took responsibility and, you know, he wasn't ashamed to stand behind some of his ideas and concepts.
Mm-hmm. And now the Vietnam War is being used as an example of what we need to do in our military and foreign policy today.
You know, I see a lot of comparisons there. You're right. You know, especially the war in Iraq. You know, the war in Afghanistan, maybe a little different concept there. I think most people, in my opinion, from what I've heard and talked to and military folks and so forth, we're behind the Afghanistan concept. But now the Iraq thing seems to be more along the lines of Vietnam and a lot of controversy and splits of opinion as far as should we be there or not.
Mm-hmm. The book is Boomer Time. It's written by Bill Kahn of Medford, Wisconsin. He has been an Air Force officer for some 26 years, a coach for 30, a teacher for 24. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we have some lines open for you in Madison at 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. March 1951 saw the debut of the comic strip Dennis the Menace. Is that still your favorite strip?
No, not any longer, but it was back in the day. It was, you know, my mom would kind of show me that strip. You know, she kind of thought I was kind of a Dennis the Menace of the family, being the oldest and stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was back in the day. And then, of course, the TV show that came after that as well with Jay North.
All right. Some people say that the TV show and the movie never approached the beautiful simplicity of the comic strip. Your thought on that?
I have to agree. You know, I don't know how other people think about that sort of thing, but something about the comic strip that was kind of a pure thing, and, you know, of course, with TV, they have to, you know, make things a little more dramatic and so forth, and, you know, kind of took away from the menacing character that Dennis was back in the days, you know, with the neighbors and so forth. So, yeah, I prefer sometimes the original versus, you know, the sequels and the makeovers that they do on TV and the movies.
Our guest is Bill Kahn, and the book is Boomer Time, The Lives and Times of the Boomer Generation. If you have thoughts about things that have occurred since 1950, as we go along, why we encourage you to join in. Maybe you're a boomer and you'd like to express yourself, then by all means, give us a call. 1952, in February, Elizabeth became Queen of England, and she's still on the throne.
Isn't that something? Yeah, she's had quite a reign, you know, and she still looks pretty good and still holding up pretty well physically, it looks like, as well. So that's quite a legend that she's carrying forth there.
Uh-huh. Let's go to Jordan in Whitewater for a call. Jordan, hi. What's on your mind today?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Great. Well, you know, I'm calling because I'm a young entrepreneur, so to say, and as the baby boomers are growing older, they're going to be seeing a lot of stuff changing, and I'm kind of wondering kind of maybe an opportunity for someone going out there to try and find a way to help them, you know, grow and settle down comfortably, kind of what they're looking for as they grow older and like a lifestyle, or especially with the climate change, if where they really want to move, is it really going to be in Florida or where all the hurricanes are coming, or is it going to be back in Wisconsin where it's beautiful and you got the lakes?
Boy, fantastic question, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
I can't speak for all boomers, obviously, but, you know, I've been around the world, you know, pretty much with my Air Force travels and so forth, and lived at various places. But, you know, I love Wisconsin. I love the change of seasons and the fall and, the, you know, just the good, hard-working ethics of the folks here. We'd like to, you know, I think a lot of us would like to stay here, you know, if it wasn't, you know, maybe for taxes and stuff like that, perhaps being a more of a burden to some than others, perhaps. But, you know, we're worried about Social Security, obviously. You know, is that going to hold up or down the road? And health care certainly is a big concern for the boomers as well. As, you know, is that going to be there for us also? So, you know, we have these concerns, but, you know, I think a lot of us who have grown up in Wisconsin and lived here would love to stay here if we could. So I don't know if your entrepreneurship would find a way to help us do that somehow, but I'm sure wishing you would.
Definitely. Now with, well, of course, the health care and with that coming up, what do you think would be a great idea for people that really want to see something change or how to get involved or any ideas that you've experienced from your past in a way to maybe make those things better, the health care and the, you know, all the Social Security and whatnot? Is there anything that we could do or get involved off the top of your head that you know of?
Boy, you know, I'm not an expert in this field, obviously, but, you know, when I look at other countries, and obviously, you know, when I've lived in those countries as well, you know, and they have socialized medicine or whatever, I know we don't maybe want to go that full route, but, you know, sometimes you need the government to step in and take some control and, you know, maybe reduce the cost of medications and medical. Everybody should have medical care, I believe, and I think most of us boomers would as well. You know, if you're sick, you should be able to be treated regardless of how much money you make or how much you have in retirement. So if that, you know, big stickler should ever be resolved, I think that would be great, because I know that's a worry of a lot of my fellow teachers up here in Medford and so forth. We're worried about our retirement and health care and stuff like that and being able to pay for all that down the road.
Yeah, well, that's one of my majors is business finance and political science. So it's on my mind, and I want to change something. So it's always good to hear different opinions.
Oh, great.
Jordan, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And the only advice I could give you is to pay a lot of taxes so you can help support the Social Security of guys like Bill Kahn, who's a few years away and still probably has a thought in the back of his mind, is Social Security in full going to be there when I hit my 60s?
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks very much. We appreciate your call. Again, if you'd like to join in, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about the boomer generation, those people who's were born sometime after 1946. Bill Kahn of Medford, Wisconsin, was born in 1950, and he's written about the lives and times of the boomer generation in this new book, Boomer Time. It's published by Wynn Press Hosting, and you can find more information at wynnpresshosting.com. Bill, again, thanks for being with us. And July 1952 saw the sighting of several UFOs that were tracked on radar and reported flying around the nation's capital. Jet aircraft were scrambled, the objects disappeared, and then reappeared once the jets were gone. Since you were in the Air Force, you probably have a lot of interest in this.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk about some of that. I don't know if it's still classified or not, though, so I kind of hesitant to say anything, but certainly we did have experiences. I was working at a early warning site up in Duluth, Minnesota, where we tracked radar, and, you know, we were looking mostly for Russians coming across the border at the time during the Cold War. But we had several reports from pilots who spotted things in the sky that they could not explain. So certainly that brought a little credibility to this UFO phenomenon that occurred back when that first started back in Washington, D.C.
1952.
Right.
Let's go to the phones again to Marty next in Green Bay. Hi, Marty. What's in your mind today?
Hi, good morning. I also am a baby boomer. I'll be 50. I was born in 51. The reason I'm calling is because I have a son that's in the Marines. I'm very proud of him. He's over in Iraq. But why aren't we, why isn't this generation stopping these wars? I mean, we went through Vietnam and the first Gulf War. Why aren't we as a generation, because we know that war is not the answer, why aren't we doing more as baby boomers to understand that this is one planet and we're all one people and we can't be killing each other?
Boy, you've got some great callers calling in. That's a super question. You know, we went through, as you mentioned or alluded to, that, you know, we went through Vietnam, and that was not a good experience. You know, we've been through a lot of bad experiences militarily in the past. And I got to be honest with you, the military folks that I talk to aren't all that proud of what we're doing in Iraq right now. You know, we'll follow orders. We'll do what we're supposed to do. And, you know, that's the way it is. We'll follow the President of the United States. But, you know, there's some confusion as to actually why we are there and why we can't put an end to this. I think most of us were all in favor of enduring freedom when we went into Afghanistan after 2001. I went back into the service for 2 years because I thought that was a valid thing to do. But now with the Iraq thing and, again, the folks I talk to, we're a little bit confused. We don't know why, and we'd like to see maybe this thing come to a good resolution somehow. We don't know how it's going to work, but certainly I don't think we're 100% behind that either as a military. But, like I mentioned, we are military. We do what we're required to do and asked to do. So, yeah, maybe the Boomer Time folks could step forward a little bit and, you know, and talk to some of the generations, you know, prior to ours that have also been through these bad times as well.
Well, Marty, I hope things turn out well for you and your family, and thanks very much for giving us a call today. Jeff in Hayward, let's give you a chance to get in here. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I was calling. I'm a history major at the University of Eau Claire, and a lot of the things that our professors are talking about is this giant vacuum that's going to be created in the workforce when the baby boomers retire. And I'm planning on being a teacher, so that might actually work out for me, that plenty of jobs are going to be opening up as I'm graduating. But it seems to be a concern, especially among my economy professors, and I just wonder if there's any comments on that.
Well, being an educator, you know, for the last 26 years and so forth, what I tend to see is a trend towards more more computers being inserted, more technology being inserted in place of the real teacher. I'd like to think that teaching, because we have such an impact on these kids' lives, would continue on, and we could have that one-on-one contact with them and, you know, make that influence on them. But, boy, it looks like, you know, with the onset of, you know, being able to have one person direct all the education as far as history and stuff like that goes via computer and assignments through computers and online and so forth, maybe down the road a few years education won't be quite as big a field to go into as it is now. But I think it's a very valid, very worthy occupation, obviously, even though it's underpaid, and you'll have to look forward to that, I suppose. It's going to be a vacuum. There's going to be a lot created when the boomers start to retire, as we are now.
Thank you.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much. And certainly the diminishing workforce, the turnover of boomers indicates that he might have a better chance of getting a job than he would have 10, 15 years ago.
It could be, yeah.
Let's go back to the phones to Jim in Mount Horeb next. Hi, Jim. What can we do for you?
Hi there. I was just wondering, when you talked a little bit about Joe McCarthy, is whether or not Leroy Gore, who was the editor of the Sauk Prairie Star and started the recall against McCarthy, that was included in your book?
No, I didn't pick up on that name. I wish I had. If I'd known that he was from Sauk Prairie, in my research, I didn't actually run across that name or those articles, but I wish I had, because I'd like to draw as many ties to Wisconsin as I could.
Well, in the revised version.
Yeah, there you go.
Leroy Gore plays a role, and he was instrumental in the movement that finally ended up with In March 54, with Edward R. Murrow and Fred Friendly presenting their new special called A Report on Senator Joseph McCarthy, and it wasn't long after that that I believe that he was gone.
Right. Yeah.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And if you would like to join this conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, toll-free at 800-642-1234. Toll-free call. Martinez White is our on-air producer today, and so he'll be taking your call. Let's go to Dave next. And, Dave, what's on your mind?
I was born in 1951, and I'm a retired teacher now after 30 years. And one thing I noticed when I was in grade school, all the kids went home for lunch, and their mothers were there and made lunch. In high school, I would say 80% of us went home. I went to college in Stevens Point, came back, and subbed in Marinette, and all the kids ate hot lunch. And now, over my 30 years of teaching, I've noticed a great erosion of the family unit. Very few kids are graduating from high school with the same two parents. Many times our conferences were with double sets of parents who are living together. And what can we do as the baby boomers in our society now to get that family unit back intact? Because I really believe that that's a part of a lot of our problems.
Yeah, I agree. I addressed that in the book a little bit, too. I remember the times back when we all sat around the kitchen table, and if it wasn't just for a meal, it was just to talk, you know, about what happened during the day and stuff like that. It was just a great meeting place without the TV and the video games and all those distractions. You know, as a teacher yourself and as a teacher myself, you know, your points are very valid. You know, you can almost tell sometimes which kids come from a divided home. I mean, they're just the way that they behave and some of their study habits as well, you know, shows some of that stuff. And it's sad, but it's a fact of life, I'm sure. I think parents have to not be the best friend of their kids. That's my opinion. I think they have to step up and be a little bit more of a disciplinarian and, you know, take charge of the family life and family get-togethers and maybe shut off that video game or that television or whatever and call the kids in for a sit-down and a talk and stuff. Again, rather than just please them and keep them from whining and complaining all the time, you know, step up and be a true parent like we had, you know, you and I when we were boomers as well. You know, I'm sure your mom and dad were, you know, in control of that family like mine were. And, you know, that meant a lot. I think it helped us to grow and mature a lot faster.
Oh, definitely. One thing we noticed, our son ended up being valedictorian, but when he was inducted into the National Honor Society, 14 kids were being inducted, and I looked at my wife. I says, "What do you notice about those 14 kids? 11 of them had the same family unit that they started off with, and I think the family unit had so much to do with their education."
Yeah, you know that's kind of what I kind of mentioned, and you know, you don't want to say it outright, but that, you know, that family unit is such an important factor in how that child is, you know, brought up and the stability in the home and all that kind of stuff. You know, these kids that we do have trouble with now, we have access to, you know, their parents and so forth now on the internet and emails and so forth. And very often, those kids that are having the trouble in class, you look it up and you've got to send two different emails out to the father who lives here and the mother who lives there or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's a definite problem, especially in education and how the child's raised, obviously.
Great. Thank you for your time.
All right, Dave. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you and your call. Let's see what's on Judy's mind in New Lisbon. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I was wondering, being a baby boomer, I was born in 46, so I'm on the vanguard of this whole group. We came from what has been labeled the best generation, the greatest generation. I'm wondering if we as a group, because there are so many of us, can't get together and start giving back something as minimal as those of us who have made a life where we may not need or only need part of our Social Security, put something in the plan where we don't get it all. We leave some more for those coming up, because so fewer are paying for us the way it, when it was set up, the ratio was different. Another thing we could do, so many schools are dropping art or FIED or some of the fields that we could get certified in some way and go back into the schools. We could mentor the kids that you've been talking about. I just think there's a whole generation that's going to float away, and we can do so much more. We came from, what can you do for your country? How would we get something like that started?
Well, I don't know. Let me just start by saying, you know, I am a huge fan of the greatest generation. I mentioned that in the book. I just respect so much what you folks prior to 46, you know, have done for our country and the sacrifices that you've made. As far as, you know, what we can do to give back, I'm a big fan of volunteerism. You know, I've kind of directed my efforts towards animals and you know, starting shelters and stuff like that. But yeah, why couldn't we? If we're retiring at an earlier age now, and we've got the wherewithal to do that, is if we plan well for retirement, and if Social Security is going to be there for us, why can't we afford to give back? You know, we have a broad breadth of information that we've accumulated over these years and experience that I'm sure some of these kids would, you know, kind of hesitate initially at, but I think certainly if they got to know us, they'd realize that, hey, you know, these mistakes were made by us. I'm not going to make those same mistakes. Yeah, we need to volunteer more. We need to give back. You're right, absolutely. And I think our boomer generation is doing that to a certain extent. I think we're pretty good at that. I don't know if the following generations will be as giving, but yeah, you've got a very good, valid point.
And thanks for raising it, Judy. We appreciate hearing from you. And let's see what's on Jill's mind in Racine. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I'm a military brat, Air Force brat. I'm a boomer. I was a teacher. If I could get in touch with that woman, I have 100 ideas. And when I taught, I did learn. I taught high school. I taught at Park. I went to Park and taught at Park. They won't say it, but they want their parents. They want to sit down for a meal, a cooked meal. Nobody's home. I talk to them. And this is what they'll tell me. There's also a film about, it's not just boomers, it's military brats, our journey home. It's about our heritage and how we grew up. Things do change. Schools, when I first started teaching, they listened. But now they're still 17 is 17. No matter what they've seen or done, they're still 17. 12 is 12. 10 is 10. They still need someone who knows right from wrong.
Well, you sound a lot like myself. You've been through some of the same experiences I've been through, and as far as being a teacher and, you know, in the Air Force and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you're right. The parental unit is so important. And, you know, I don't think back in our day, earlier on, that a lot of our mothers went out and worked like they did. So there was always mom when I came home, and I'm sure probably for yourself as well. And I'm not saying we have to go back to those days, but you're right. There needs to be somebody there, these latchkey kids and so forth that are coming home and no one's around. And the programs that they keep cutting from schools, after-school programs, are just a shame that we're losing all that stuff. Yeah, the kids do respect parents. They may not show it outwardly, but I'm sure that, you know, they would listen, and they would, if they did decide to take charge, like I just mentioned before, I think parents should step forward and you know, maybe enforce that discipline that we grew up with. And I don't think it's all bad. I don't think going back is all that bad. I know that sounds maybe a little peculiar, but the past wasn't all that bad for us boomers. I think we had some very good things that we can contribute to the generations of today, too.
Thanks very much, Jill, for raising the point for offering your counseling on that. Bill Kahn recently retired from Medford Area Senior High School, where he taught Phi Ed for over 2 decades, earning the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction Award Best Practices for Phi Ed Classes in Wisconsin in 2006, and the WSAW-TV7 and WEAC Teacher of the Month Award in February 2006. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
You have been a coach of several sports at Medford Area Senior High School, and including coaching several people who earned some national All-American honors.
Yeah, I've had that privilege. Yeah, I had a few when I taught and coached down in Freeport, Illinois. Started out there. I had some very good female swimmers down there. And then when I moved to the Milwaukee area, we lived in Waukesha, and I taught it and coached at Brookfield Central. And I had a state runner-up and a state champion down there, and a few All-Americans, academic All-Americans, too. So, yeah, I've always been kind of proud of that. I know it's your pride is a terrible thing, but when you look back at what you could do for those kids and get them to that point, you know, it's something you can just kind of look back and have some good feelings about, because you push them maybe a little hard, but, you know, they accomplish their dreams and their goals, and, you know, there's no words that can, you know, describe how that feels for a coach.
Bill Kahn is the author of the book Boomer Time. And in there, I read that President Eisenhower authorized the creation of the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs in April of 1954. And you retired teaching there, didn't you?
Actually, I was when I was called back to active duty, when I actually volunteered to go back after the 9/11 situation, I went back in October of 2001, and they offered me any place that I wanted to go, which was kind of nice, because the idea, the concept was that I would come back into active duty, and a pilot then could be freed up to go fight the war in Afghanistan. So I decided, well, that seems to be a good mesh between my military background and my teaching to go to the Air Force Academy. So I went out there, and I was a trainer out there for a couple of years, and you know, that was a very interesting experience. It was also the time when they had the sex scandal out there and, of course, got a lot of, you know, congressmen involved and national attention, and several of our leading officers were fired. But just the experience with those cadets out there and the educational process out there was a fantastic one.
Something that I discovered was missing from your book, which I really have to chastise you about, is that I'm looking in 1957, I don't see anything in there about the Brooklyn Braves, or being the Milwaukee Braves.
The Milwaukee Braves, oh my goodness, yeah. I was in, of course, in Kansas City at the time. Yes, absolutely. That's all you hear about up here. You know, Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews and, you know, all those great Joe Adcock and some of those great, fantastic players. Yeah, I should have absolutely put those in there because that was we haven't seen that since. You know, it's been a long time since we've seen a World Series champion here in Wisconsin.
It might be this year.
I hope so.
50 years later.
They get their act together. I'm sure that they're capable of doing it.
Well, 1957 was quite a year. You've got the Soviet Union launching Sputnik 1 into space in October that year, and that started the ball rolling on an exciting half century of space travel.
Sure did, yeah. They kind of laid down the gauntlet, you know, and we needed to follow suit, and I think we did a pretty good job of surpassing the Russians and their attempts to be the first one on the moon and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And, excuse me, in birthdays in 1957, you've got Spike Lee, comedian Paul Reiser from Mad About You,
right,
and Osama bin Laden.
Oh, boy. There's a group, huh? Yeah, that was the fun part of it. You actually was looking back and seeing when some of these people were born, and you know, and some when they passed away, just brought back memories and so forth. But you know, to find out, you know, that some of these guys were boomers as well as, you know, myself, it was really kind of a fun trip to go back and look at some of that stuff.
Let's go to the phone to Pete in Marinette next. Hi, Pete.
How you doing, gentlemen? And thank you for taking a call.
Sure.
Very interesting conversation. I just turned 57 in August. Yeah, I'm really scared. It seems like there's a whole generation of people like myself that just got rolled over by technology. The laptop computer and how they connected all the dots in the world. I think we were it. I floated through a good time where I worked and was making $20 an hour and had benefits. And now all that manual or being a laborer, it was good at the time, but now it seems like, we're getting a lot of unskilled people in the world, in the country, and the kids, God dang, you know, the American dollar is slipping. I don't know what's going on. I get scared, like, there's going to be nothing left in 10 years. And morale with the kids, lawyers involved, everybody's arguing. Concern, you know.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's a worry for us boomers, you know, that we see what this new generation is kind of coming into its own now and kind of stepping forward, and it is a little scary, you know. And you're right, the technology thing is kind of, you know, put us boomers on the back burner. I know I just enrolled at UW-Stout and to get another master's degree, and boy, I tell you, working with these, they're all 20-year-olds in that class, and they know so much about computers and how to access this and that, and boy, it's a struggle for those of us that didn't grow up that way, grew up with typewriters and shorthand and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you know, it is a little scary, I think, especially for us boomers to turn over the world to this next generation. I think we got to have a little faith. I think these kids are smart. I really do. They're smart and they're funny and they're witty, but you know, they got to realize and have the work ethic that we had. And I think that will certainly help us propel us into a better future, maybe than we look like it's going to be right now. I don't know. I kind of agree with you on those points.
Well, I just sure hope that they'll let us know and keep it, instead of keeping it a secret to themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
All right. Thanks a lot. We appreciate hearing from you, Pete. There's time for one or two more calls before we have to close off. So if you have a closing question or comment, why, give us a call in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. What did you learn from writing this book?
Well, you know, it was so much fun to look back, you know, doing all the history and all the research. And, you know, what happened for me, and I don't know if it happened for people who read the book or not, but just, you know, when you would read about something that happened in the past, it would just bring back memories of what I was doing at the time and, you know, some of the great times that I had, you know, with, like, pickup baseball games and, you know, like I said, sitting around the table talking with Mom and Dad and stuff like that and talking about, you know, Watergate or talking about the hydrogen bombs and stuff like that. It was just, you know, it was just such a great experience to go back and relive some of those years that we've kind of forgotten about, I think, as we go through our lives now. Things are so cluttered that it's nice to kind of reflect back once in a while.
In your conclusion, you write that we still have a lot of areas to work on. What are some of these areas that you see besides the war in Iraq?
Yeah, I think we've kind of talked about that a little bit already. I think we need to do more as far as taking care of our elderly and so forth, as far as health care goes and the price of prescription drugs and so forth. I think that we need to maybe target making sure that people can retire in comfort. You know, instead of spending billions of dollars, you know, in a war that seems to have no good end possible to it, I think, you know, maybe we could put that money into helping the younger generation with their education. If kids want to go to college, they should be able to. If we're looking forward to Social Security, we've been paying into it for all these years, we should be able to expect something in return. And we shouldn't have to pay an arm and a leg, you know, to go and buy a medication to keep us alive. So those are the things I think we need to kind of maybe step forward. And maybe with our retirement time, you know, contact our congressmen and senators and so forth and make those changes that are needed to make the future better for everybody here in this country.
Bill, thank you so much for spending time with us. The author of Boomer Time, it's published by Wynn Press Publishing, and you can get more information at www.wynnpresshosting.com. Bill, thanks very much again for spending time with us today.
Hey, thanks, Jim. It's
been a lot of fun to look back over the last 50, 60 years and see the events, the names, the people who've been important in society over that time. If you would like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store. That's 1-800-747-7444. You're asking for program 913F, as in Frank. I'm sorry we couldn't get to more of the calls, but we ran out of time. And we thank you very much for listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.